Atmane svatma vibhakta mrityave.
Anatmane svatma vibhakta mrityave.
Namostu te yatma vidam paratmane.
Anatmane svatma vibhakta mrityave.
Sa karana karana
lingam
iyuse
sa karana karana lingam iyuse
sa karana karana lingam iyuse
sva
mayaya sangvrita Rudha, Dristaye, Svamaya, Maya, Yasangrita, Rudha, Dristaye, Svamaya, Yasangrita, Rudha, Dristaye, Sakarana, Karana, Lingami, you say. Svamaya ya sangrita ruta dristaye namostu te dhyatma vidang paratmane anatmane svatma vibhakta mrityave sakarana karana lingam iyushe Samaya yang maya ya sang vrita rudha vidrishtaye Namostu te dhyatma vidang paratmane Anatmane svatma vibhakta mrityave
Sounds like someone wants to get in.
Sakarana karana lingam iyuse Samaya ya sangrita rudha dhishtaye Astu
may there be
Te unto you
Adhyatma
The absolute truth.
Vidam
for those who know.
Para
atmane
the supreme soul.
Anatmane
to the conditioned jiva soul.
Svaatma
from yourself. In the form of time.
Vibhakta,
who gives?
Mrityave,
death.
Sakarana,
having a cause.
Akarana,
having no cause.
Lingam,
the forms, respectively.
The material form of the universe,
and also your original spiritual form.
It's interesting.
You say,
who assume,
Samayaya,
by your own mystic potency,
Sangrita,
uncovered.
Rudha
and blocked
Dristaye
vision.
So some very interesting concepts being presented in this verse.
And we see that often the way verses are translated by the Acharyas and the commentaries the Acharyas give on it, they take one word, just like we see here, we'll be looking at here, this lingam, because lingam is connected with, I would assume, I'm not, you know, being a Sanskritist or anything, but we see it's connected here with sakarana and akarana, meaning sakara means have a cause, akara means has no cause, and then the next verse is lingam. So the form that's connected with is the form, you know, the form is connected with that which has a cause and that which has no cause. So then we'll see in the translation how Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur has commented on it, and this has been translated in this way. And then also he goes on to point out here in the transliteration, he says, Swamayaya Asangrita Rudha Dristaye. So this by the mystic potency of Krishna, this form is simultaneously covered and uncovered to the person's vision. So you see how it's elaborated. It's very interesting. Translation. Let me offer my obeisances unto you. You are realized as the Supreme Soul by those who know the Absolute Truth, whereas in your form of time, you impose death upon the forgetful souls. You see how Krishna is everything. To persons who are liberated souls, they see, just like we see that story when Krishna, when he entered into the arena at Mathura, when he was going to kill Kamsa, he was going to wrestle with the two wrestlers, Mustika and
Chamura.
Chamura, yeah.
Chamura.
Chamura. Chamura, yeah. So he was going to wrestle with these two wrestlers. And then all the residents in Mathura, they saw him in a different way. You know, like the women, they saw him as the most lovable child, you know, and then the wrestlers were seeing him as a formidable opponent, and Kamsa was seeing him as death personified. Or we see the same when people go to Puri and they take darshan of Jagannath. Jagannath is many things to many people, and they see him in different ways. Some people, the bhaktas, they go there and they see him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Others, the impersonalists, they go there and they see him as Brahman. They see this as just like a temporary manifested form. Some people see him as Durga, and others see him as Ganapati. So whatever their approach is, he sees them as. And the wonderful thing about Krishna, he accepts that approach, and they get benefit from that approach. There's a phrase which is in the Bhagavatam where it's saying how he accepts the bhavagrahi janardana. Whatever the mood of approach is, he accepts that in that mood, and we get that benefit. So however one is approaching Krishna, they're getting the benefit of that approach because they're approaching him. Whether it's for, you know, like, as it says in the second canto, third chapter, it says, Akama, Savakama, Ba, Moksha Kama, Udradihi, Tivrena, Bhakti Yogena, Yajeta Purusharam Param. Whether one's full of material desires, without this material desires, or desiring liberation, one should by all means worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we see, you know, different people, they have their different motives, but still they're approaching Krishna, and they're getting the benefit. So, whereas in the form of time, he imposed death upon the forgetful souls. You appear both in your causeless spiritual form and in the created form of this universe. Thus, simultaneously, uncovering the eyes of your devotees and obstructing the vision of the non-devotees. Very interesting how he's just appearing. You know, it's saying here, he's appearing both in your causeless spiritual form as his original two-handed Krishna, this Tribhanga form, Shamasunda, standing there playing the flute. This is the original form of Krishna. And by this appearance, as we see in this, in, you know, this appearance of Krishna, you know, over 5,000 years ago, he was performing many wonderful pastimes simply to enlighten his devotees, simply to attract his devotees to him, simply to increase their love. No other reason than that. He was just enjoying these lovely exchanges with his devotees, you know, even from the point of his childhood. I mean, some of the pastimes he would perform in Vrindavan. Oops. Not that I really like having a microphone here, but anyhow. Some of the pastimes he would perform in Vrindavan as a child, you know, like one of the pastimes I always find particularly sweet is you hear this story about how him and Krishna and Balaram, you know, he and Balaram would crawl up behind the calves, the young calves, and they see their tails dangling down and they grab a hold of the tails. and the cars would get a fright, and so they'd run. They'd run, and Krishna and Balaram would be holding onto their tails and be bouncing along behind the calves in the dust of Vrindavan. And of course, if anyone knows what the dust of Vrindavan is like, it's very soft, so you don't have to worry about them being hurt. It's like talcum powder. Actually, you don't actually come across much real dust in Vrindavan anymore. But when you used to walk around behind the temple, Ramanreti, where our temple is in Vrindavan, is particularly known for the fine dust. And it's like walking on talcum powder. When you used to go along the cowherd boy trail behind our Goshala, now they've raised the road up so many times, it's all rocks and stones and things, and they've tarred it actually. But it used to be like walking on talcum powder. It's so nice. And that's what the dust of Vrindavan was like. But now there's only really one place you can go. Just past Imlital, there's a temple down there. It's called Nityanandavat, but also Sringavat. So Nityanandavat, this is the place where Nityananda, Vat means sitting place. You know, just like out at Radhakund, you also have this Janava Baitak, same thing. Vat, Baitak, same thing. This is where Janava used to sit. Or you have the place where Lord Chaitanya used to sit on Sharmakund, you know, called Chaitanya Vat or Mahaprabhu Vat. He used to sit there and meditate on Krishna and Radharani. So you have this place called Nityananda Vat, which is where Nityananda used to sit and look at the Jamuna. It's just past Imlital. It's just on past Imlital, before Imlital. I think it's just past Imlital. Very, very nice place. And then also there's a place called Sringavat there. It's the same thing. And Sringavat, interesting pastime used to take place there, that Radharani would sit there and the gopis would braid her hair, you know, braid her hair and decorate her hair. So then one day Krishna stuck up and he said, shh, shh, like this to the gopis, he's telling them to go away. So he started to braid Radharani's hair, and Radharani was like really impressed with the expert way her hair was being braided. And she thought the sakis were doing it, and she was like glorifying the way they braided. And then she took the mirror and she's looking at her hair and she saw Krishna. So she became stunned by that. She was very happy. So just behind this place called Sringavat, there's a like building there. You go up the stairs, you can take darshan, and there's a lovely painting of this pastime. So just behind there, there's a place called Brajaraj, which is a temple to the dust of Braja. So you can take a little bit of... So this is considered to be one of the very few places. I think there's two or three places left where you can actually experience the dust of Braj. So, you know, Krishna and Balaram, they would be bouncing along behind the calves and getting all covered in this dust, the dust of Braj. And the sakis would see this, you know, the gopis, the older gopis would see this, and their hearts would just be melting with love and affection for Krishna and Balaram. And they perform many, many wonderful pastimes like that. So we see here how it's described, the Shruta Dev, he's describing how you appear in your causeless spiritual form simply to you know, develop this love and attraction the devotees have. And also he's saying, and simultaneously uncovering the eyes of your devotees and obstructing the vision of the non-devotees. So we see that when Krishna, when he left this world, there's a story how the hunter, this is recorded in the 12th canto. Is it 12th canto? How the hunter saw the foot of Krishna, you know, in the distance through the bushes. He saw Krishna's foot and he thought it was the head of a deer. So he shot an arrow, and he just nicked Krishna's foot, just cut his foot. And Krishna went and performed this pastime of leaving the world. And he actually left behind a body. Yeah. And the purpose he did this was to bewilder the atheists. It says in the Gita, Naham Prakasha Savasha Yoga Maya Samavi. He says, Yoga Maya, by my energy, they become bewildered. Mudohang Nabijanati Mudohang Nabiyanani. No, I don't remember. Anyway, he's saying, he says, Naham Prakasha Sarvasa Yoga Maya. These like foolish and unintelligent persons, they're bewildered by my Maya. You know, and they're actually perpetually pushed, you know, they're kept in this material world. They actually cannot understand the supreme realm by the force of Krishna's energies, by the force of the external energy. So here we see the same point is being made, how by you know, the created form of the universe, the created form of the universe is actually just an energy of Krishna. We see how in the 11th chapter of the Gita, Krishna reveals to Arjuna his universal form. And he's showing how everything is contained in that form. And he himself is also represented in that form. We see how Arjuna, he's seeing, you know, this ferocious form of Krishna, and all the warriors in the battlefield are just entering into his mouth and being smashed and, you know, crushed up by teeth, by Krishna's teeth. And it describes how there's like bits of warriors sticking out from between you. Just like, you know, when you have prasad sometimes, you know, you've got like bits of pineapple or something stuck in between your teeth. So, you know, Krishna's got all these bits of warriors and things stuck in between his teeth. So Arjuna was describing that. So this is another form of Krishna. But by this form of Krishna, he bewilders people. They start, just like you see with primitives, natives and things. They accept God in nature. They see the greatness of nature and they worship that. So in you know, however one approaches Krishna, then Krishna reciprocates with them. So they want to see the greatness of God in nature, so then they see nature and they see nature as God. Or someone else who has an impersonal approach, then Krishna, you know, allows that to be their reality, if you like. Because this is what they want. He says, Yeyata mam prapadyante tangstataiva bhajamya. As they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. So if one is satisfied to worship nature and to see that as God, then that is God for them. If one is, you know, satisfied with the impersonal, Brahman, then God, you know, Krishna allows them to see that as being the supreme, and he makes that their reality. Because that's the reality they want to experience. But we understand, as it's described in the Bhagavatam, that this is an incomplete realization. What's that? Vedanti tattva vidas tattvam yajkana jnanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaniti sabjate. This is described in the first canto of the Bhagavatam. And in the purport, Srila Prabhupada, he points out how the Brahman, the Paramatma are all features of Bhagavan. And he says, but those who follow those paths of realization, their realization is incomplete. It's just like, Prabhupada would give the example of the sun. The sun, you know, the sun planet, the sunshine, and the person, personality of the sun god. So we see, like, the sunshine, it's a part of, you know, it's a manifestation of the sun's energy. But it's an incomplete. You know, it's just like the sun is shining. We think that's everything. There's no sun planet. There's no sun god. There's nothing. It's just the sun shine. That's an incomplete understanding. And someone who's childish might think like that. Just like Prabhupada was saying that when he was a child and he saw an aeroplane, he didn't understand that there were actually people inside the aeroplane. He just thought it was like a flying silver thing. He didn't realize it was, you know, actually people inside. So that's a childish understanding. And, you know, children will see like that. They'll see, you know, things that are wonderful and vast and things like that, and not realize, you know, the what is going on behind that. Like, you know, as they say, the bigger picture. They don't actually see all these things that are going on behind that. So in the same way, those who are attracted to the impersonal realization, they don't realize that this is simply the bodily effulgence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the same way that someone who thinks the sunshine is everything doesn't realize there's a sun planet, and also that there is a personality of the sun. So even in modern understanding, they appreciate the sunshine, the sun planet, but they don't realize there's a personality involved. They don't realize there's someone actually directing the sun. You know, the Vedic concept is this Surya Dev. He rides around on his chariot, you know, one of the spokes is on top of Mount Meru, and the other wheel, one of the wheels runs on this mountain ridge and just goes round and round like that. It's quite amazing, the Vedic definition. But we see that there's a personal explanation to it, whereas, like, just accepting the sun planet, this is an impersonal explanation. Yeah. So in the same way, Krishna's making these arrangements here for different people to understand according to, you know, as he says, as they surrender unto me. So according to their degree of surrender, the knowledge is revealed. And as we surrender to Krishna more and more knowledge becomes revealed. And as Krishna points out, he says, you know, in the Gita, Bhakti Mam Abhijananti Yavanyas Chasmitatpataha, that he says, only by unalloyed devotional service can I be understood as I am standing before you. You know, this two-handed form of Krishna, as we see standing before us, can only be understood by unalloyed pure devotional service. There's no other method. And we see, you know, in the pastimes that are described in the Mahabharata, in the pastimes that are described in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that so many persons actually had the darshan of Krishna in his original two-handed form. Oh, gosh. Excuse me. I should turn this off. That we see that in the pastimes that are being described in the Mahabharata and the Krishna book, the Srimad Bhagavatam, etc., that many, many persons had darshan of Krishna in his original form, but they could not appreciate that. Why? Because they didn't have any bhakti. They had no love of Krishna. They had some other motivation, just like Duryodhana. What was his motivation? He was trying to conquer the world. He wanted to be the king of the world. He wanted to be the emperor. Even though it was not rightfully his claim. Same as Kamsa. Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha, all these personalities, they actually had darshan of Krishna in various forms. Yet because of their unfavorable approach, because they weren't trying to serve Krishna, they weren't trying to please Krishna, they weren't trying to understand the Supreme Absolute Truth. Therefore, Naham Prakashasa, they were covered by Maya. And their understanding was illusory. So we see here, Shrutadeva and Bahulasha, it's a very interesting pastime this, because we see that Krishna, and it's interesting the way Sukadeva Goswami, he's just describing the whole pastime of how Arjuna captures Subhadra and then just dropped it and just moved straight on to another pastime. You know, Parikshit Maharaj didn't ask him any question about it. There was nothing leading up to it. He just entered into this wonderful description of how Krishna, he decides he's going to go to Mathura and visit these two great devotees. And certainly great devotees, because we see, look at the philosophy that Shrutadeva is speaking here. You know, and then I think it's the previous verse. Extraordinary. It's in verse 44. He says, "It is not that we have attained the audience of the Supreme Personality only today, for we have been associating with him ever since he created this universe." So he's understanding. A neophyte will come before the deity and see that that's it. There's nothing more than this. You know, God doesn't exist anywhere else except the deity in the temple. He's not in the heart of other living entities. He's not in every manifestation in the material world. They just come and they see the deity. Oh, and the guru. That's it. Deity and guru. Vaishnavas forget them. Walk all over them. Offend them, whatever. They don't see that. They don't see the importance of, you know, how Krishna is manifest in the heart of every living being. Yeah. So Shrutadeva, obviously, a very, very advanced devotee, he's seeing, he's appreciating that I've always had the darshan of Krishna in so many different forms, in so many different ways. So he's a very advanced devotee. So Krishna's gone there, and Bahulashva is the same, very, very advanced devotee. He's gone to Mathila just to give them his darshan, because he understood, you know, they couldn't come out of Mathila because of commitments, because of obligation. And this is really another really interesting point. That, you know, we see that, you know, great persons such as Bahulashva, Shrutadeva have understood human life is a life of responsibility. It's not that we just, you know, I was having a discussion with one devotee yesterday, and it was very interesting, you know, he's been a devotee also a long time, and he was pointing out how, you know, like he was thinking how we should start businesses in ISKCON, like devotee businesses. Like you see in other, you know, various ethnic groups like the Chinese, the Jewish and stuff, they have businesses in their community, and the people all, you know, the people of the community all sort of do their business within that community. And he was pointing out how that if we had done that within ISKCON from the beginning, how our community would be so much stronger. Which is true, you know, if we actually dealt with each other and supported each other both financially and spiritually, emotionally, etc., the community would be much stronger than it is now. But one of the points that came out from the discussion was how devotees have this tendency, just, you know, like say for instance they're working for such and such a devotee, they're not feeling so, oh, it doesn't matter, you know, Prabhu will understand, you know, he's another devotee, he understands these things. They don't take the responsibility very seriously. So Krishna consciousness means taking responsibility very seriously. Just like we have our service for the deities. I remember one time Indradum Maharaj, he was talking, and he was, you know, talking about his vows he had made to Srila Prabhupada. And he just made this point. He said, "I would rather die than give up my vows to Srila Prabhupada." He'd taken the responsibility so seriously. And we see that, you know, these devotees here, Shrutadeva Bahulashva, they've taken their deity worship so seriously, their responsibility to serving Krishna so seriously, that even though the Supreme Personality of Godhead is directly manifest in his original two-handed form, not very far away, they won't go there because of this responsibility. So we need to take this responsibility we have. Krishna has given us the most wonderful service I mean, this, you know, like Prahlad Maharaj, he talks about, he says, Dulabham Manusan Janma, this rare human form of life. This is the first thing we have to accept. We are so fortunate, we have this human form of life. Very, very rare. I was speaking on Saturday at Nityananda Prabhu's house, and I was just discussing, you know, about how many living entities there are in the room we were sitting. And then I asked Mahatmaji, how many living entities are there in one human body? How many did you say?
Billions and billions.
Millions and billions. Within your one body, there are millions and billions. Just like in your stomach, I made this point the other day, just like in your stomach, there is these bacteria. They're good bacteria. They're actually essential for digestion. And you can go and buy these tablets, you know, in India, I take these tablets regularly because in India, you know, bacteria gets very disturbed quite easily. And you take these tablets, what are they called? Probiotic tablets, and each tablet has got something like 10 million of these living entities in it. So just one little tablet, 10 million living entities. So here we are, we take a tablet, take a bottle of tablets, got 100 tablets in it. That's what you get, is 100 tablets in a bottle. Right? How many millions of living, there's a billion living entities, probably more, but at least a billion living entities in that one bottle. Right? This big, about that round. How many is in this room? Yeah, what, maybe 35, 40? So does that give you some idea of how rare the human form of life is? It's really, really rare to get the human form of life. So first thing, appreciate that you have a human form of life. What is your duty? Now, it says, Atato Brahma Gigyasa. Now that you have the human form of life, what is your duty? The Vedanta Sutra, very first aphorism of the Vedanta, no, the third one, sorry, of the Vedanta Sutra, is that now you have this rare human form of life, your duty is to inquire into the nature of the Absolute. That's what it's for. If you don't use it for what it's meant for, it gets taken away. Adoga janti tamasaha, Krishna says in the Gita. You get cast down into lower species of life if you don't use this gift. Understand it's a gift. It's just like someone comes and gives you a wonderful gift. And he says, oh, thank you so much. I've always wanted to have one of these. You appreciate it. Of course, if you say, oh, great, thanks a lot, just put it. Whoever gave you the gift, I'm not going to give this guy anything again. He doesn't appreciate it. It's just like, you know, sometimes when you're a child, your parents would give you things. And then you just, you know, like say, they give you a bicycle. I remember my younger brother. My parents gave him a bicycle, and the way he would ride the bicycle, he wasn't into brakes and things like that. He'd just like ride the bike down the hill really fast, and when it came to stop, he'd just jump off the bike and let it crash into the fence or something like that. So he didn't really appreciate the gift of the bike. So my parents didn't give him another one. He had to go out and buy his own. And so, you know, it's like if we're irresponsible with things, then we don't get that gift. So in the same way, we have this wonderful human form of life. And it has a specific purpose. The human form of life is meant to understand the nature of the Supreme, the nature of Krishna. Who is Krishna? Who am I? What is my responsibility? What am I supposed to do? Now, and there's a very amazing conversation between Sanatan Goswami and Lord Chaitanya. When Sanatan Goswami, he first met Lord Chaitanya, because he was, you know, Sanatan Goswami and Rupa Goswami, as is explained by Srila Prabhupada, very, very highly placed people in the government of Nawab Hussain Shah, Prime Minister and Treasurer. Very, very powerful people. Practically, they ran the whole kingdom. And Nawab Hussain would just go off on his various trips, you know, conquering lands and stuff like that. They ran the whole kingdom. Very, very powerful people. Very, very wealthy people. And what did they do all day? They didn't go to the office. They sat at home and listened to people speaking on the Bhagavatam. That was their activity all day long. And Nawab was getting very upset about this. He didn't like that they were just hearing from the Bhagavatam. So, very learned, spoke many languages. They spoke Persian, they spoke, you know, Sanskrit, and etc., etc. So many different languages they spoke. Very learned, knowledgeable in the scriptures. And then when Sanatan Goswami approached Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he said that, you know, he said, people, they glorify me as being a most learned and erudite man. He said, this is, I don't understand the simplest thing of who I am. And he said, why am I suffering these burning threefold miseries? And we find there's so many people in this world, people are glorifying them as being so intelligent, so knowledgeable. They even have these quiz shows on television now, where you have a little buzzer and they ask a question. Whoever presses the buzzer first wins the prize. They get $1 million at the end of it or something silly like that. And then they're glorified as being very, very intelligent. And actually one time Prabhupada's humour was just outstanding. He said, "I have a PhD in trivia." Yeah? Prabhupada knew something about everything. And he was very, very observant. Even like when he would travel on the trains in India, he would count how many carriages there were on the train. He said, because you never know when someone might ask you this question. So he knew about everything. PhD in trivia. But Sanatana Goswami, he was saying, I'm being glorified as a learned man, but I don't understand these very essential points. Who am I? Why am I suffering the burning threefold miseries? How many people understand that? Do you understand that? Why are you suffering in this world? And if we really understand that, what does that imply? If you have knowledge, that's one thing. But if you have realization, what does realization imply? Come on. No, what does it imply? You understand something to be a fact. Right? If I hold a flame up, right, and I put it near you, you understand that if I touch the flame, I'll get burnt. So what do? You don't touch it. Isn't it? Simple thing. But a child, just like Prabhupada, another example in Prabhupada's life, his son saw the fan. So in those days, fans were probably quite a new innovation. And he was intrigued by the fan. He kept wanting to put his hand in there, and Prabhupada would pull him back. Because he knew that if he put his hand in, he'd become hurt. Metal blade, it'll cut the finger. They didn't have plastic in those days. It was all metal. So then Prabhupada kept pulling him back, but the child had no realization. So he kept wanting to touch it. So Prabhupada's friend said, pull the plug out, let the fan slow down, then let him touch it. He'll get the realization of the pain involved, but he won't be hurt. So he did that, and the child stuck his hand in the fan, tang, and it hit his hand, and he understood. He understood the pain was involved, so he doesn't do it again. So the point being is, we read in the Shastra that we're not this body. We read in the Shastra we're suffering burning threefold miseries. But because it's only gyan, because it's only knowledge, book knowledge, we don't actually act upon it. But when it becomes vigyan, when it's realized knowledge, then we act upon it. And this is what the process of devotional service is for, is to help us to develop vigyan. Right, we see here, we're talking about Shrutadeva. Now, if you read this section, it's talking about the qualities of Shrutadeva and his activities. And it's talking about how he was a simple brahmana. A simple brahmana is one who's satisfied with whatever comes by its own accord. He's satisfied with that. He doesn't have to go out and make lots and lots of money. He doesn't have to have a big palatial house to live in and all sorts of nice furnishings, etc., etc. Satisfied with whatever comes by its own accord. Not making big endeavor. And it's also talking about how he reacted when the Supreme Personality of Godhead came to his house. He was jumping and dancing. He took his chatter off and he was waving his chatter around in the air. He was very excited that Krishna has come. He wasn't hooting and hollering like some kind of jackal. We see people these days, even devotees we see these days, hooting and hollering in kirtans and stuff, But we don't see, like a cultured person like Shrutadeva doing that. No doubt he was chanting and singing. No doubt he was chanting the holy names. And he was expressing his excitement in a very, very refined and cultured way. He was very excited. You can understand. Can you imagine that, If the most, just like when you can see like videos of when Prabhupada came. Devotees were so excited that Prabhupada was there. I remember Krishna Chetra one time telling me about a video he saw of when it was I don't understand the terminology. If you understand this better, then please forgive me. But when the Jewish people, they have their scripture, I think it's called the Torah, and they keep it in a very, very revered place, right? Very, very honored place that's all wrapped up. And he's telling me, he was watching this video, when they brought the Torah out, it was like a ceremonial thing, and the people were like literally jumping in ecstasy just because the book was coming. Did anyone do that when the Bhagavatam came over here this morning? And actually we have these books up here and parents let their children pull pages out of them. This is a manifestation of Krishna. You know, sitting here, we need to understand, you know, it's so important. We've got to understand what we have. You know, we have this rare human form of life. We have this most extraordinary, rare process of devotional service. How many people do you know who take Krishna consciousness seriously? How many people do you know who actually know about Krishna consciousness? Well, we've got a room full of people here, but there's not that many. So very, very important. And we see that Shukadeva, you know, Krishna's come and he's just like dancing in ecstasy and he's waving his chad around and then he bathes Krishna's feet and he's got this water and he's so happy and he's just sprinkling the water everywhere, all over the place, all over the building, all over his family, all over himself. He's getting drenched with this water that's bathed Krishna's feet and the feet of all these sages. You know, and not just ordinary persons. Sukadeva Goswami himself was there. You know, Vyas was there. Who else? There's like all sorts of, you know, Narad Rishi. I mean, Narad Muni. My gosh, what a personality! You know, and it mentions 12 of them here. Oh yeah, Narad, Vamanadev, an incarnation of Godhead. Yeah, Atri Rishi, Krishna Dvaipayan Vyas, most extraordinary personality. Read in the Mahabharata about his pastimes, most extraordinary, most powerful personality, and respected by everyone. You know, like in the battle of Kurukshetra, there's like some really heavy things going on, and Vyas one time they were going to kill this person, and Vyas just turns up and says, "No, don't kill him," and that was it. You know, and it's kind of interesting because Kshatriyas, when they get involved in the battle, they're so passionate and just like forget everything else and they're just like hell bent on killing this person. And like, you know, they taste their own blood, they get even more incited to fight. And then Vyasa turns up and says, "No, don't kill him," and that was it. You know, it's just an extraordinary person. You know, Parashuram, another incarnation of Godhead. Asita. Aruni, Sukadeva Goswami, Brihaspati, Kanva, Maitreya Rishi, again a very, very elevated personality, and Chayavan Muni. Interesting story, but I won't tell it, but there's a really interesting story about Chayavan Muni. How this, you know this Chayavan Prash? There's an interesting story about how this Chayavan Prash came about, but I won't tell it, but it's kind of an interesting story. But, you know, and Krishna's like, they were going to walk because they were following Krishna around. They're so enlivened by Krishna's association. You've got to understand this, you know. Like when people actually have the association of Krishna, their senses become so enlivened. Like you can read in the Nectar Devotion about the different manifestations of people when they're experiencing, of devotees when they're experiencing elevated stages of devotional service. It talks about how the different, you know, all the different manifestations, all the different bhavas that manifest, and by the bhava you can understand how advanced a person is. So they're very, very saintly advanced persons. They have all these different manifestations of attachment to Krishna, of ecstasies that are manifesting in their body. You know, so they're just like, they'll walk to the ends of the earth just to be near Krishna, just to hear what he's saying. Yeah? And then they appear in Mithila, and then Bahulashtra and Shrutadev see them. And then by Krishna's arrangement, they split into two completely different groups. So there's one group of sages and Krishna goes with Bahulasa, one group of sages and Krishna goes with Shrutadeva. And they're all thinking, even the sages don't see this. Only Krishna knows it's happened. Yeah? And Bahulasa, he's just like overwhelmed with ecstasy. Shrutadeva, he's just overwhelmed with ecstasy. And they both deal with it differently. You know, because obviously Bahulasa, he's a king, he has much more opulence, he's more affected by the mode of passion than Shrutadeva is, but still, he's a greatly advanced devotee, a greatly advanced devotee, so advanced that Krishna has come to see him. Just like we see in Udupi, nice temple. If you ever get the chance to go to Udupi, very, very nice temple of Krishna there, which was founded by Madhvacharya. And so they have this beautiful deity of Udupi Krishna. He's like exquisitely beautiful. Just melt your heart, he's so beautiful. And then outside the temple they have this lake, small lake, you know, like a pond they've built there. And there's a deity of Madhvacharya in the middle of the lake. So they were having this festival when I was there like years ago, and they had this festival where the deity was coming out and circumambulating Madhvacharya. So the deity was going around the devotee. And we see that happens quite often. Krishna worships his devotee. So we see here that Krishna, he's gone to the extent of coming to visit the devotees. And the devotees are so enlivened by Krishna's presence. And they're manifesting. And we see, the point I'm getting to here is how Shrutadev, he's manifesting all these brahminical qualities. You know, and this is what we're trying to cultivate in ISKCON. Prabhupada said this International Society for Krishna Consciousness is for cultivating a class of brahmanas. Now you may think, oh well, but that's not so important. I'm not really brahminically inclined. Leave that for the others. You know, let the pujaris do that. I'll read something for you here at the end, just to impress upon you the importance of brahminical culture. It's essential. It's not just something that's optional. It is essential. It is what this Krishna consciousness is all about, is developing a brahminical class. Prabhupada says the last sentence of the last paragraph, and it talks about following the regular principles, for no meeting, no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling. And then Prabhupada says, no one can be on the brahminical platform without having these preliminary qualifications, meaning the four regular principles. And without becoming a qualified brahmana, one cannot become a pure devotee. And this is quoted from Prabhupada's Krishna book. So Prabhupada's here emphasizing the importance of brahminical culture. Why is it? Krishna says, Namo Brahmane Devaya Go Brahmane Hitaya Cha Jagatitaya Krishnaya Go Vindaya Namo. That the Brahmanas and the cows are very dear to Lord Krishna. And it says, Namo Brahmanya Devaya Go Brahmane Hitaya. So the Brahmanas are very, very dear to Krishna. Why? Why are the Brahmanas so dear to Krishna? Om Tad Vishnu Paramam Parungsara Pashanti Sudaya Divya Chakshuratatam Tad Vipraso Vipam Jagavigunza Samindate Vishnu Yat Paramam Param. So the Brahmanas, they can actually see the abode of Krishna. Paramam Padam. This Paramam, the Padam means like the destination, sometimes feet. In this sense, it can be both. Because Prabhupada translates it as they're always looking only at the feet of Krishna. Paramam, the supreme feet. Who has the supreme feet? Krishna. Or sometimes it's also meant the abode or destination. So in it's a verse from the Rig Veda, and Prabhupada quotes it quite a lot. And it's pointing out how the Brahmanas, because within themselves they're always seeing that supreme abode of Krishna, they're able to reveal the abode to others. Because it's only through the Brahmanas that one can understand Brahman. And the Gaudiya, or the Vaishnava Brahmanas, are the highest because they understand the highest concept of Krishna. Of Brahman as Krishna. They understand this, that the highest concept of Brahman is Krishna. There's no higher concept than Krishna. So this is why brahminical culture is so important, because through the Brahmanas we can understand Krishna. The Brahmanas reveal the Supreme Personality of Godhead to everyone. So this culture is very important. And it's not just a matter of we sit at a fire yaga, we get a Brahman thread, I'm a Brahmana. It's not like that, You can go to Vrindavan, get on a rickshaw. Sukadev can tell you. So many Brahmanas riding rickshaws, pushing rickshaws, isn't it? And their Brahman thread, I tell you, it looks like a piece of black, dirty string they picked up out of the gutter. No, I mean, a Brahman is known by quality, not by initiation. You can get initiated and have a Brahman thread, but that doesn't make you a Brahmana. A Brahmana is known by qualities. And we see here, how do we develop these qualities? We see here, it's describing the nature of Shrutadev. In the scriptures, it's giving us so much information on what a Brahmana means. We see Krishna, he says, Samo dama tapo satcham chanti rajam evika jnanam vijnanam astikam brahma kama sabhavajam. He talks about, the qualities of a Brahmana. His sama is this equanimity to all. Just like we see, earlier on in the Gita, he talks about Vidya Vinaya Sampane Brahmani Gavi Hastani Shuni Chaiva Sapakicha Pandita Samadashana. He says Samadashana, he sees with equal vision all living entities, because he's seeing that they're all, the super soul is there within the heart of all of them. He's seeing that they're all jiva. But how many of us see like that? How many of us see like that? A boy looks at a pretty girl, what does he see? Does he see a jiva? Does he see a servant of Krishna? No, he sees the body. A girl looks at a handsome, strong man, plays the madanga nicely or something, what does she see? Oh, a nice brahmachari, I'd like to marry him. Not seeing the jiva. Prabhupada, when he looked at them, he saw someone to engage in Krishna's service. So, I mean, that's not to say, oh, well, you're really bad because you don't see light. No, just understand your degree of realization, understand your degree of advancement, and act accordingly. Srila Prabhupada was so advanced, he could, you know, be in a room with a woman and not be disturbed. We're not on that level. And when I say woman, it means man or woman, depends what body you're in. See it both ways. Don't think that I'm being, you know, chauvinistic here. Just see it both ways. Because I'm in a man's body, I talk like that. But see it both ways. But when Prabhupada was in a room with a woman, he wasn't disturbed by that. There was a story that he told about his Guru Maharaj. No, actually, it's a story Hari Kesh told. Hari Kesh came here years ago. They were arranging some book publishing. And he told a story about one time he was with Prabhupada in Bombay. And Hari Kesh, when he was a younger devotee, he was quite agitated by the ladies. So he was cooking for Prabhupada, and it was in France. And he was down in the kitchen, and there was all these Matajis in the kitchen. He was very, very disturbed by this. He came up and he said, Prabhupada, I'm not going to cook. There's too many ladies in the kitchen. And Prabhupada said, well, I'm not going to eat. And then later on, I think it was sometime later, when they were in Bombay, this story I do think happened in Bombay, this discussion came up again. I don't think it was with Hari Kesh this time, but the discussion came up again. And Prabhupada was making a point about Yudhisthira Maharaj, and Krishna was talking with Yudhisthira Maharaj. And Yudhisthira Maharaj, Krishna was asking Yudhisthira Maharaj about, you know, he said, but Yudhisthira, you know, he said, your mother is so beautiful. And Kunti was a very, you know, stunningly beautiful person. And he says, but, you know, I mean, aren't you disturbed by that? Doesn't that agitate your mind and senses? And Yudhisthira, he said, you know, I'm not blind. I can see that she's very beautiful. And just as Prabhupada was describing this to the devotee who was there, I don't remember who was there, but just as he was describing it, then this life member came into the room, and he had a very beautiful wife. You know, she was with him. And then Prabhupada's describing this story to the devotees, and he's saying, and Yudhisthira Maharaj is saying that, you know, I can see that my mother is very beautiful, but I do nothing. What can I do? She's my mother. I do nothing. So he's not blind to the fact of it. And then Prabhupada is coming in, and he says, just like we can see this woman, she's very beautiful. And he's like, new sort of life members just walking around. We can see she's very beautiful. And obviously all these things are coming through. I'm like, oh God, you know, this obviously saying this. She's like trying to disappear into the carpet sort of thing. And then, but what do? We do nothing. So we see a very advanced devotee can see it like that. So for him, when there's a beautiful woman there, he's not bothered by it. But for us, you know, because we're not so advanced in devotional service, we can see that if we allow ourselves to come, you know, too much association with the objects of the senses, it doesn't matter whether you're a man or a woman's body, it's the same thing. Exactly the same thing. So when we come too much association with the objects of the senses, we become affected by it. And we see, you know, devotees, they become very affected by these things. They start to act in foolish ways, parading around like peacocks. You see it, you know, devotees, they'll dress themselves up, you know, make themselves, you know, ladies, they make themselves look very attractive. Men dance in foolish ways in kirtan just to attract the opposite sex. Foolishness. Because it's only agitating your mind and senses. It's all it's doing. You're only, Prabhupada would say, it's just like, you know, in this material world we have a fever and we're acting to try to increase the fever. Understand our level of advancement. You know, maybe you guys are really advanced devotees. I can tell you factually that I'm not. And it's not got nothing to do with humility. I can tell you, you know, if you want to sit down for a long time, I can tell you all the things about that desires in my heart. Yeah, and there's a lot of, you know, low base desires there. So, you know, I do have a little bit of intelligence, and I can see that if I put myself in such an environment, I become affected by that. So I don't put myself in that environment. Yeah. If I act in a certain way, I become more attracted to the objects of the senses. That's not our goal. Our goal is to give up sense attraction. Our goal is to give up all these material desires. Our goal is to take shelter of Krishna's lotus feet. And the process of devotional service is for that purpose. The process of devotional service is the perfect medium. There is no better way of giving up material desires than taking shelter of Krishna's lotus feet. No better way. There's no material method you can follow that will help you to give up these material desires. There is nothing. Only the process of devotional service will do it. So don't use the process of devotional service as a vehicle to fan your material desires. Because it will also help you do that. use the process of devotional service for the purpose it was intended. And the purpose it was intended for is that we can take shelter of Krishna as we become, you know, 100% purified of material desires and go back home to Godhead. And there is a very, very clearly outlined process. If you look in the Madhya Lila, I believe it's chapter 23. I may be wrong. Maybe it's 22. I can't remember. Anyhow, Lord Chaitanya describes to Sanatana Goswami the 64 acharas or 64 behaviors that are favorable for development of devotional service. First off, he starts with 10 things we should do. And he starts off with Guru Padashraya, Diksha Guru, Sevana, Saddhama, Siksa, Priksha, Sadhu, Marga, Anugamana. Right? So it means Guru Padashraya, you take shelter of the lotus feet of a spiritual master. Guru Sevana, you serve him. Guru Padashraya, Diksha, sorry, Diksha is the next one. You take shelter, you take initiation. Guru Sevana, you serve him. Saddharma, Siksa, Priksha. You make inquiries about the principles of devotional, about the rules and regulations of devotional service. Sadhu Marga Anugamana. And you follow in the footsteps of the previous acharyas. These are preliminary. These are not the be all and end all of devotional service. This is the beginning. It's just like when you go to school, you learn mathematics. 1 + 1 = 2. That's the beginning. That's not algebra. That's not calculus. That's not trigonometry. I don't even know if they use these terms anymore, but at least when I was at school they did. This is, you know, in those days, this was like high-level mathematics. So one of the problems comes is devotees, they get initiated and they think, this is it. There's no more to devotional service than my guru. This is Kanista. Understand that. You know, we go through these 64 items that Lord Chaitanya explained to Sanatana Goswami. And these are all the acharas of devotional service. These are the things we need to do in order to develop ourselves. Rupa Goswami, in the 5th and 6th and 7th chapter, I think it is, in the Nectar Devotion, he outlines them in further detail. It's like principles of devotional service and principles of devotional service further explained, I think, are the chapters. And the other one, the 7th chapter, he talks about the 5 most potent forms, I think it's the 7th chapter, 5 most potent forms of devotional service. So Rupa Goswami, Lord Chaitanya has explained these 64 items. So we start off with 10 things you should do, then 10 things you don't do, then another, I think there's 39 further items of things to do, like worshipping Tulsi, following fast on different days, things like that. These things will help us to develop our Krishna bhakti. Then he ends off and he says, Sadhu Sangha Nama Kirtan Bhagavat Shravan Mathura Vasa Sri Mathura Shari Savan. He talks about, and then in the verse after that he just glorifies them and says, just by having a small attachment to any of these things, connection, one can achieve perfection in devotional service. So he says, Sadhu Sangha, associating with devotees. We associate with devotees. How do we associate with devotees? See, like, Krishna consciousness is science. It's not just some sentimental, whimsical speculation. It is science. Highest science. How do we associate with devotees? Anyone can tell me? With some reference from an authority.
Talk about Krishna.
What's the reference? I was thinking of something different. What was that verse? Such a sieve head. Tadati praktigrin nanti guya makati pichti bunkti bojayate chaiva sadvidim priti lakshanam. Rupa Goswami, he's our acharya. We are Rupanugas, means we follow the path of Rupa Goswami. And he said, Tadati praktigrin nanti. What does this mean? We give gifts, we receive gifts. Guyamakyati prichati. We inquire confidentially and we reveal our minds. But if we, you know, say for instance someone inquires confidentially from you, oh Prabhu, how can I do this? And you reveal your mind to them and then they go tell everyone in the world. Which happens. Who's had that happen to them? Anyone? Nobody here has had that happen? I have. Numerous times. Anyone else? I think most of us have had that happen, right? Where you reveal your mind confidentially to someone and they blab it all over the town. Put it all over the internet. What's the result of that? What happens when we do that? Adrian? When someone does that to you, what do you do? Don't talk to them anymore. Yeah, you tend to close up. And what happens is when we close up, we start to have all this, like, you know, damage, all this emotional stuff going on inside. It's like, you know, oh, I did this, you know, I said this to them and they said this and I don't like this person anymore. All this kind of, like, you know, unfavorable emotional stuff starts to build up, and it inhibits the potential for devotional exchanges. So when someone reveals their mind to you in confidence, respect that, cherish that, and honor that. That person has revealed themselves. They've opened up to you. This is a very, very, you know, sacred thing that they've done there. You know, they've revealed their heart to you. Don't abuse that, you know, because you're abusing that devotee. So be very careful about that. If someone does, you know, and if you feel the need to share it with someone else, then you have to go ask their permission. If you feel it's going to be better for them if I share this with their guru or share this with their spiritual authority or whatever, you need to ask their permission. You can't just say, oh, well, but I know better. You know, I'm an authority, I can do that. No. You're breaking a sacred trust there, and you get a reaction for it. The same thing will happen to you. You have to be very careful. And he says, this is one thing we're very good at here in Melbourne. Huh? Serving prasad, receiving prasad. But of course there is etiquette about serving prasadam. Many etiquettes. And we need to cultivate these etiquettes. So these are the ways we develop loving exchanges with devotees. So these rules are given by Rupa Goswami or by Lord Chaitanya. And then we see here also in the Nectar Devotion, there's a list of 64 things not to do. Very, very important things. Just like, there's a couple I wanted to mention because I've been noticing that some of them are going on a little bit. And it's not like I'm trying to say, oh, you're bad people. I'm not trying to say that. I'm just trying to bring these to your attention so that hopefully at some point in the future you can take notice of them and start taking. So, this is given by Rupa Goswami. It's not my opinion, not Prabhupada's opinion. It's given by Rupa Goswami. So we understand we are Rupa Nugas. So we follow these things at Rupa Goswami. And by the way, you know, every morning we chant the Das Nam Aparad. You know? That comes from this chapter. It's the last paragraph in this chapter. So it talks about, you know, I don't think I've ever seen anyone enter the temple in a palanquin. And we all, you know, we observe the festivals, Rath Yatra, Janmashtami, etc. One should not avoid bowing down before the deity. Very important, you know. We need to, you know, these things, a lot of these things are items of like respect, trying to understand my position in relation to Krishna. I am just like a tiny, insignificant little servant, right? So then I come before Krishna. He is my master. I bow down before my master without fail. Every time we come and go from the temple, we bow down. When Prabhupada was here, you know, Prabhupada would come to the room, devotees would bow down. Prabhupada would leave the room, devotees would bow down. Yeah? So it's same with Krishna. And the reason we respect the spiritual master is to understand, you know, to learn how we respect Krishna. So we must bow down when we enter the temple and bow down when we leave. If you have something in your hands, put it down. One should not enter the temple to worship the Lord without having washed one's hands and feet after eating. Very important also. We need to be clean. You don't actually bow down. You don't offer obeisances unless you're clean. Don't enter the temple in a contaminated state. We don't circumambulate in front of Krishna. Like, just like, you know, when we do Tulsi Puja, we close the curtains or close the doors. Because you don't offer some respect to someone who's lesser in front of someone greater. Because when there's someone greater present, you should always offer respect to them. Sometimes also I see that, like, devotees, they'll pay obeisance to Tulsi with their feet in the direction of Prabhupada. Sometimes people pay their obeisance to the deities, they're disrespecting Prabhupada by showing their feet to Prabhupada. That's why, and actually it's described, Sanatana Goswami, he describes in the Hari Bhakti Vilasa, he says, an intelligent person, it's interesting, he says this, an intelligent person, when they come to the temple, they offer their obeisances with their left side to the deity and their right side to the Guru Stamba. So someone who has intelligence does that. Unintelligent people, they do otherwise because it's disrespectful. One should not lie down before the deity of Krishna. One should not accept prasad before the deity of Krishna. We don't eat in the temple. Right? It's disrespectful in front of Krishna. One shouldn't speak lies in front of Krishna. In front of the deity, one should not speak very loudly before the deity. One should not talk with others before the deity. So generally, you know, when we're in the temple room, all our glorification, all our talk or whatever, everything should be directed towards Krishna. That's what this room is for. Not for any other purpose. We come in here to worship Krishna, worship Kaunitai, to worship Jagannath Das Subhadra. So when we come into the temple, just try to keep that in your mind. Keep your focus, you know, on what we're here for. We're not here to discuss, you know, what we've got to do on Sankirtan today. We're here to discuss glorifications of Krishna. We're here to worship Krishna. We're here to satisfy Krishna. This culture, this Vedic, this Gaudiya Vaishnava culture in particular, Vedic culture, it's interesting because Vedic culture is interpreted in different ways by the different sampradayas. It's the same thing, the same principles. Vedic culture is focused around the worship of Krishna, but the different sampradayas do it in different ways. So in our Gaudiya Vaishnava culture, the culture is meant for worshipping Krishna. It is giving us the perfect ways of worshipping Krishna, the perfect means to worship Krishna. It's the best vehicle to worship Krishna. You know? So the acharyas are giving us this achara, this behavior. Achara means behavior. Right, and as I mentioned, in Lord Chaitanya, he described these 64 items to Sanatana Goswami, how to serve Krishna in a way that's going to facilitate us developing our love of Godhead as rapidly as possible. And that's what we want, isn't it? Do you want to hang around here for a few thousand more births, maybe a few million more births? Do you think it's bad now? Wait for another 10,000 or 20,000 years, see how bad it is then. Wait till the end of Kali Yuga. It gets so bad at the end of Kali Yuga that Kalki has to come and kill them all, chop their heads off. On his own, he just kills the whole world. It gets so bad that he has to do that. They're so demoniac, they're so atheistic. Do you want to wait around to get liberated by Krishna in that way? No, we have this rare human form of life. Use it properly. Try to, you know, imbibe the instructions that are given to us by our acharyas. It's not what I'm saying. I'm just trying to, you know, repeat what Rupa Goswami has presented us, what Sanatana Goswami, what Lord Chaitanya has presented us. Try to imbibe what they're giving us. You know, do these things. It's just a lot of them are simple activities. You know, even things like worshipping Tulsi. They're very simple things. I mean, every household in India, you'll find Tulsi. Every single household. I'm not saying necessarily have Tulsi in your house, but you know, at least we should worship Tulsi, respect Tulsi. Even a simple thing about respecting Tulsi. Why do we walk around Tulsi that way? Clockwise? Yeah, it's auspicious, but also you respect someone by having your right side towards them. That's how you respect someone. When you have your left side to them, it's disrespectful. So we don't walk around Tulsi the other way because that's considered disrespectful and inauspicious. Yeah. There's simple things. You just, you know, there's so many different details there, but you understand these details. Try to understand why we do these things. Ultimately, we do these things for the satisfaction of Krishna, to please Krishna. Because when Krishna is pleased, as we see here, you know, Bahulashva, he was like, you know, saying these nice things to Krishna. He was glorifying Krishna. He was trying to make Krishna happy. Why? Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains why, because he wanted to stay in Mathila for a few days longer. He didn't want him to just come and go. So there's a way, just like, you know, if you visit my house, right? And then I sit you down and I put some chandan on your forehead, I give you a garland and I give you something nice to drink in a nice place. This is nice, I like it here, you know? You sit down, you're comfortable. But you know, you come knocking on my door and it's like, what do you want? Sorry, no, go away. How do you feel about that? You know, you're not going to like that kind of exchange. So we see, you know, a cultured society, when someone comes to the door, even if they're unexpected, there's an interesting concept in Vedic culture where the unexpected guest is called Atithi Bhagavan. They're seen as a manifestation of God. Because an opportunity to serve has come to my door uninvited. And they're respected and they're worshipped and treated in a very, very proper way. So the idea is like we try to please Krishna by our activities. You don't need to be in any ignorance or any doubt about what to do. It is all explained by the acharyas how to please Krishna. Now it just remains for us to take up these activities and to please Krishna. It's a simple thing. It's not complicated. Just follow what Krishna says. Just follow what the acharyas, read what they say. You know, you just don't be in any doubt. Read the Nectar of Devotion. This is a very important book. One of the most, Prabhupada said, this is the law book for the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Why did he say that? Because it tells us how to practice devotional service. So it's a very important book to read that. And also read, you know, Lord Chaitanya's instructions. He's telling devotees how to act. And so if we learn these things, we will learn how to please Krishna. Okay. So let me finish there. Any questions at all? Kripa Sindhu. A cat is just an inauspicious creature, full stop. Yeah. You can see in you know, a cultured society, a Brahminical society, if someone saw a cat, they'd go jump in the Ganga. Because it's just auspicious. Yeah, you know, like it's also you know, like you can read when was it Kangsa, I think? When his death was approaching, he would look in the mirror, he couldn't see his own reflection. When he'd be walking down the road, you know, auspicious living entities would pass him on the left side, inauspicious living entities would pass him on the right side, you know, things like that. I had an experience once. It really blew my mind when this happened. I was driving Indra Maharaj's car in Poland, just dropping off at the airport, and we came out of the airport. And I was just driving down the road, minding my own business, and this person, because they drove on the wrong side of the road there, not the right side of the road, because they're passing everyone on the left. This person was on the right-hand lane. They wanted to turn left, and they turned in front of me like that, and I went bang, straight into them. I mean, really hit the car hard, and just borrowed just brand new Mercedes-Benz, and just wrote the whole front end of it off. And Maharaj had gone to some country, and I tried for days to contact him and that, and I finally did get in touch with him. He told me what to do. Of course, he wasn't happy. And anyhow, so I was going to the insurance office to see if we could claim this on insurance. And as I was walking to this, I parked the car, you know, someone would take me there, I parked the car, and I'm walking up the road, and it was just like an open area, there was no house or anything. And this dog came up, right? And this dog just came up, it walked, it circumambulated me and walked off. I was like, oh God, you know, the whole world's just dropped out, you know. That was just like, to me, that was like really, you know, I read about this stuff but never experienced it. When that happened, I realized things aren't going to go well here, you know. And it didn't. They wouldn't insure it. And it was like, you know, it was a lot of trouble. And it was like, anyhow, long, long story. But it's just when that happened, it really sort of hit me how true these things are. You know? So they're inauspicious living entities. So when you have an exchange like that with an inauspicious living entity, it's not good. Of course, in Kali Yuga, everything is inauspicious. Every single thing in this age. There's only one auspiciousness. Kirtanaha Deva Krishna Sha Mukta Sangha Param Brajet. He says it. Asti hi eko Mahadguna, says. Asti hi eko. There's only one Mahadguna, great quality, in this age, and that's the chanting of Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. So we don't have to get all mental and think, oh, it's all bad, I'm going to go to hell. And no, just understand. Take shelter of the holy name, everything's auspicious. You know, not just the cats and dogs in this age, even the human beings are so inauspicious in this age, isn't it? Just walk around on a Sunday afternoon during the summer and breathe in, and what do you get, you know? There's crematoriums everywhere. They're burning bodies wherever you go. It's a great Australian pastime. Burn a body on the weekend. Yeah? A very inauspicious place. People are drinking so much alcohol. They drink so much alcohol in this country, they have to make laws about it to try and limit it. And they don't have the good sense, they don't have the intelligence to be able to control their senses themselves. The government has to make laws to stop them from doing these things. Yeah. Anything else? Mataji? I can only say because Sanatana Goswami says to do it. See, another interesting thing like this, it's like in the Chaitanya Charitamrita it says that you can get more bliss from chanting the Panchatattva Maha Mantra than you can from chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Much more bliss. So why do we chant Hare Krishna exclusively? Anyone know? No? That's not the answer Prabhupada gives. Huh? No. By whom? Because Lord Chaitanya told us to do it. That's why we do it. Chanting Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Siva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda will give you more bliss than chanting Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. But because Lord Chaitanya instructed us to chant Hare Krishna, we do it. So because, I mean, I'm sure there is a reason, but I don't understand the reason. Yeah? So I'm sure there is a reason we do that, but because Sanatana Goswami says an intelligent person does this, I want to be an intelligent person. Because if I'm an intelligent person, I'll understand what's the best thing to do with my life. Right now, I don't necessarily understand that, and I see in this world not many people understand that. Yeah? So therefore, I'll follow what he says. And you know, our acharyas, they give us so many instructions. I mean, I just encourage you all to try to understand what the acharyas are instructing us to. They're not giving us instructions that are meant for our, you know, entangling us further here in this material world. They're giving us instructions that are meant to help us return back to the spiritual world. So try to understand these instructions. Take them seriously. Take them very, very seriously. You know, Prabhupada's included so much information in these books. He didn't have much time. He wouldn't have put information in these books if it wasn't important. So understand that every single word that Prabhupada has written in these books, your life depends upon it. These words are so important. Prabhupada was up all night long, every single night of the year, translating these books. He gave his life, he put his life energy, he put his whole life and soul into these books for one purpose. To take you back to Godhead. Take it personally. It was meant like that. Take it personally. These books are meant to take you back to Godhead. Not for somebody else. Oh, well, they're for people on the streets so we can purify them and that. No, they're for you personally. And if you take it seriously, you'll get the benefit. If you don't take it seriously, you won't get the benefit. There is certainly some importance to these various auspicious and inauspicious times. Just like we see that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would never travel on a Thursday afternoon. He would either, you know, start his journey before, or he'd send his shoes ahead the day before, but he would never start a journey on a Thursday afternoon because it's an auspicious time to start anything. But of course, you know, we need to be practical according to time, place and circumstance. Kalapatradesh, you need to, you know, of course when you're in India and, you know, you're with family and stuff and they're very, very particular about these things, you don't want to offend them. You know, because the idea upon them is you have to look at it. I was talking to my wife about this yesterday. It's like, you know, when we have an exchange with a person, right, how do they feel at the end of that exchange? Do they feel better because of it? Or do they feel, oh God, this person's too much? You know? So when you're having exchanges with your family, for instance, we need to look at the greater cause we're trying to achieve here. Do you want to inspire them to be devotees of Krishna? Right? And if you disrespecting their beliefs causes them to have a negative response to you, then that hasn't been a very positive preaching experience. So if by, you know, I remember my mother, you know, when I first started, I can't really say practicing Krishna consciousness. When I first had connection with ISKCON, I used to try to convert my mother. And she was just like, didn't want to know about it. You know? So then I just stopped doing it. I just didn't do it anymore. And it wasn't long before she died. She says, you know, you turned out the best of all my sons. You know, so I feel that was quite a positive preaching experience. You know, because even though she wasn't chanting Hare Krishna when she left, well, as far as I know she wasn't chanting Hare Krishna, she wasn't a vegetarian, she wasn't reading Prabhupada's books, she still felt positive about me being a devotee, which would have a long-term beneficial effect for her in terms of her spiritual life. So, you know, there are many of you I know whose parents are devotees or are very favourable, that's very good. But there are many of us who don't have that. So still we need to give them a positive experience that they feel good about us being devotees. And that will go to, as Krishna says in the Gita, what's that verse? Um, Nehabikramo nashosti pratyavaya na vidyate. Svalpamapashidama shatrayate. Su alpam. So that means su alpam. Alpa means small. Su alpam means very, very small. Incredibly small. And he said, a little advancement made on this path can protect one from the most dangerous type of fear. So just the fact that your parents feel good about you being a devotee, feel, you know, like some, oh, that's nice, they're nice children, that'll stop them from taking a man on birth, and it'll give them the opportunity in their next life to come into contact with Krishna consciousness. So just always try to act to give them a positive impression. So, you know, we need to be intelligent. Not just we're mindless fanatics. Oh, yeah, they're just, you know, as we used to say back in the early days of ISKCON, they're just like, you know, meat-eating, kami, fornicating demons. Everyone thought their parents were like that. You know? Isn't it? And that was actually preached in classes. They're just, you know, fornicating, kami, demons. How are you going to be able to help a person if you think like that? Huh? I call you a demon. Huh? How do you feel about that? And what impression does it give you about how I feel about you? I obviously don't think very well about you. But if I think, oh, you know, they're just actually a conditioned soul, they don't actually understand their real position. This is the mood of compassion. So, you know, it takes a little bit of development in Krishna consciousness to have a compassionate nature. One is a neophyte, doesn't have a compassionate nature. They're just like, you know, just like all this like hellfire and brimstone, beat them on the head with the Bhagavad Gita. Beat them to death with the Bhagavad Gita, they'll get benefit from it. You know? And of course, if they touch the books, they'll get benefit. But to beat them to death with the Gita is not really, you know. But the idea is to develop a compassionate nature to help them develop in Krishna consciousness. And it's not just that, you know, in this life they have to become pure unalloyed devotees. We're all on different paths. We're all on different stages of development. And someone who's broad-minded will see that. But someone who's narrow-minded will not see that. So we need to be broad-minded. Yeah? Be happy with your own execution of devotional service. Not that you have to convince everyone else. An empty vessel makes the most sound. Yeah? Anything else? I can't remember the name of the king. He had some daughters, young daughters, and they were out in the... See, Chaiwan Muni, he was meditating in the forest, and he was meditating for such a long time that this anthill grew up around him. Right? And... anthill or worm hill, I can't remember. Anyhow, so this king, he had these two beautiful daughters, and they were out playing in the forest, and they saw in the anthill, they saw these two glowing things in the anthill. So they thought, oh, that's interesting, let's try and get them out. So they took these sharp straws and they poked them into the anthill. They actually were Chaiwan Muni's eyes. So they poked out his eyes. And Chaiwan Muni understood what had happened, and so he cursed the kingdom. That everyone in the kingdom would be constipated. So then this happened that went on for a long time. No one in the kingdom could pass. For months and months and months, it became very, very difficult. No one was going to the bathroom. And so then the king, you know, inquired from the Brahmins. He found out what was happening. In the Puranas, there's lots of far out stories, you know. He found out from the Brahmins what was happening, and then it was revealed that, oh, you know, your daughters have done this, they offended Chaiwan Muni, they poked out his eyes, so he's cursed the kingdom. And then, so he went and offered, he went and found Chaiwan Muni, said, you know, we're very sorry, please forgive us, etc., I'll offer you my daughters in marriage and stuff like that. So then he did, and then Chaiwan Muni released the curse. Now, some people say the way he released the curse was with Chaiwan Prash. I don't know if that's true. I don't think it is. I think it was just he removed the curse by, you know, his Brahman Tejas. But that's, some people say that's how it came about. And maybe it's just, you know, because the, you know, I would think the association is more because Chaiwan Muni, you know, was associated with removing the curse of constipation. If you take Chaiwan Prash, it will remove the curse of constipation. I think there's an association there, but it's not actually what happened. A lot of funny stories in the Shastra. Prabhupada tells lots of funny stories. Okay, so I think it's time for prasad. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatamaki Samaveta Bhakta Vrindaki Srila Prabhupada Ki Jayanitai Go Premanandi.